Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Timothy Molloy is a South African performer and artist. He's had the honor of performing at the opening ceremony of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, as well as performing the South African national anthem for the Springboks and at the Currie Cup final. And he has also sung the national anthems for the French rugby team, the Argentine rugby team, and the All Blacks. Television performances have included the South African Music Awards, The Voice South Africa, Miss South Africa, the Naledi Awards, and Joburg Pops. Stage productions have included Motown Gold, Little Shop of Horrors, Coming Home, Always and Forever, a tribute to Luther Vandross, Gone Too Soon, and two of Janice Honeyman's festive season pantos, Aladdin and Sleeping Beauty. Some of the many productions that Timothy has performed at include Oprah Winfrey's Live Your Best Life event, the University of Stellenbosch's centenary concert, the Opiwater Arts Festival, the Makufi Festival, Woordfees, and the National Festival of the Arts. Timothy has also worked as a vocal coach on Idols SA and as a mentor in Curo School's National Curo Create Mentorship Program. His debut album, Love That Music, was nominated for two South African Music Awards, and he has recorded the duet Mary Did You Know with Judith Sapuma for her album An African Christmas, and also featured on the Mzansi Youth Choir's recording of Silent Night. Up next, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Johannesburg, South Africa, discussing the many stages and productions that he's been involved with, and the upcoming production of Swinging Las Vegas that will be at the Teatro Monte Cassino in May of 2025 is Timothy Molloy.
With me is Timothy Molloy.
Hey, Barrett, how are you?
I'm good. And you? It's been a little while. We've been saying yes. Finally here
finally, in this moment. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this world. And how did that journey progress?
Well, you could say I was a very late bloomer. I think I was 21 when that switch went on. That when I thought, okay, I'm a performer, but I grew up in Soweto in Orlando East. My dad was a minister in the Baptist church. So music was pretty much a thing that we all did at home, aunts, uncles, cousins, everyone sang, but I was very, very, very shy. I wouldn't even sing in front of my parents. And so much so that like people kept pushing me. And I went to study in the States in America, in Ohio. I ended up doing a degree in musical theater. And that's pretty much where I found myself. I found who I was. And I found my calling because I was sort of free of pressures of being the son of a preacher man and all that stuff. But it was a wonderful journey of discovery. And at 21 in Ohio, that's when I said, okay, this is for me.
That click happened during, before, or after your degree?
During. Actually, earlier on. Complicated story. I actually had applied to study mechanical engineering. And my roommate, fortuitously, was doing musical theater. And he invited me to an open class. And that was me gone. Because in the States, they call it a liberal arts education system, which means you can sort of design your own degree. I actually wish we had that here because at 18, you don't know what you want to do. So they give you an opportunity to explore everything, sciences, history, arts, dance, everything. And then in the second year, then you can decide what your focus is going to be. So I had a bit of time to sort of find myself, and I had enough time to sort of squeeze all my requirements in for musical theater. And yeah, the rest is history.
So did you stay in the States after that, or did you come back to South Africa?
When I graduated in May of 99, and then I did a work study a few months, because you can do a work study for experience. And I did a show at a place called Cedar Point, which is, you know, in the summer there, they have these summer programs at Six Flags.
Yes.
So I did that, which was an eye-opener. And in the middle of that, a couple of buddies of mine, we went to Broadway to audition for different musicals. And that was another amazing experience, because I did a few auditions. I don't remember what I was auditioning for, but I remember getting very positive response. That was sort of the nod of approval that I got to say, you know what? I made the right choice. And I came back to South Africa not long after that, because I was yearning to come back all the time I was there. I couldn't visit home. I supported myself. I had a scholarship, but I had to support myself.
Yeah.
But as soon as I was done in the States, I said, I'm back home.
No place like Johannesburg.
No place like
Johannesburg. I also lived overseas. Anyway.
Yeah.
So you were still sort of doubting the choice once you finished, and those auditions in Broadway were eye-opening, as you said. So you were still surprised. Oh, the glue. That put the puzzle together.
But you put your finger on it, because, you know, it's one thing to believe what you want to believe, to feel it's a calling. It's another when you audition for producers, directors, MDs, and they say you've got something.
I
remember even what, there's one show that I think I went to about 4 rounds of auditions, and I couldn't go further, because then I didn't have the paperwork, because I wasn't going to work there. But for me, I'd received everything I needed, because then different people saw my potential, professionals on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I was like, if they can see it, then I guess I need to believe in myself.
Exactly.
And believe that this is a calling, and I'm going to stick to this road that I'm on now.
Like, what does RuPaul say? If you don't love yourself, how can anyone?
How can anybody? Can I get an amen? Now, those words are very true. It sounds very surface. But the moment I started to believe in myself, literally all doors opened up, because as RuPaul says, if you don't believe in yourself, no one will believe in you.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe in yourself, you're not going to take the chances. You're not going to knock on doors. You're not going to go for it and take risks and challenge yourself.
There's another aspect of it that I also feel that a lot of people, yes, is that belief. But there's also fear, in the sense that they are fearful of, now what happens if I do succeed?
Now that
I'm there, what does that mean? Am I now accountable? Are people going to look at me? Is the spotlight going to be on me? So there's that element, but there's also another element that I feel that people self-sabotage themselves, whether consciously or unconsciously, could be both, because they're fearful of what does it now mean when I'm going to be in that success of the passion that I really want. Will I enjoy it? First of all, will it be what I think in my brain is going to be? And now will people start looking at me? And I think a lot of people are afraid of that.
Definitely. I think what happens, and I think it's with all of us, that little voice of doubt is always there. When you start to succeed, that voice creeps in a little bit and says, but are you ready? But this is too big. Are you ready for it? But I think if you been through the journey that I've been on, because I came back to South Africa. I started out as a backing singer. My journey was very long, and it took me a while to really find my way. But for me, the journey that I've been on really helped me, because I went step by step. I grew slowly. People started to know who I am. And I think the longer it takes for you to make it in this industry, I find, at least in my situation, that's the best situation, because then you're mentally prepared, you're emotionally prepared. And whatever happens, whatever opportunities you get, you sort of use your experience to realize that, you know, I'm doing the opening ceremony of the World Cup or South Africa or this. But at the end of the day, you know, you go home and you grow, and you think, what have I learned from this experience? And that prepares you for other experiences that are going to come. So you have to really quieten that voice of doubt, because we can be our own saboteurs many times. But you just have to make sure that you are surrounded by people who believe in you, people who keep you honest, people who don't just tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
And people who where, you know, you want to get off of the stage and go home and live a normal life. Eat a burger, watch TV.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? You need to disassociate. Yes. And disconnect. Because sometimes if you take that work everywhere with you, it, you know, it can mess with you a little bit.
In what way?
No, just if you get off the stage and you're on that high and you need it like every time. That's why you see, you know, many artists, you know, they fall by the wayside. I had a good friend of mine, Shemda Wonderful, the late Gloria Postman. She gave me good advice. She said, when you are an artist industry, you need to choose your choice carefully. Meaning, when you are in your own private life, let it be the simple things that give you fulfillment. Going on a walk, going to a park.
Understand. Yes.
And just having a normal life, because you can't, you know, when you get off the stage and you've had these people screaming and shouting, you need to have that disconnect to say, okay, I'm leaving that there.
Yeah.
And now I'm going home and I'm going to be a normal person, which, you know, we all are.
Because that then it becomes that chasing of that feeling. And a lot of people, now it makes sense why a lot of artists start dabbling into various other things.
Definitely.
To try get that fix in a different way.
That high, that, and it has its place. And we are lucky when we have people who, or we could do a show and you get that response, but you need to be able to go home and chill and disconnect from everything. And I find for me, when you, whatever people see on stage, is a small percentage of the whole process. So at home, you're preparing, you're doing vocal exercises, you're learning music, you are enriching yourself in many ways. And so that when you go on stage, that's the end result of the whole process, which many people are not, you know, they don't see.
Yeah.
They just think, oh, you go on stage and you sing, you have fun, and that's it. But they don't realize that you may have heard maybe bad news. Someone may have heard you.
Yeah.
Something might have happened. But as soon as that music starts, put on that makeup, put on that happy face, you smile and you go on stage. And that's the challenge of being an artist, is that we are there to entertain, to we're creating a world of make-believe. But we need to make sure that we don't believe our own PR.
And that's why I think a lot of people put artists separate to them.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, there's that person.
Yeah.
My thing is that we all use three-ply toilet paper. No one's got gold-plated toilet paper.
Exactly.
Because in their backside, it'll be very sore.
Exactly. Exactly.
So the same way I interact with you is the same way I interact with Brendan, who's helping us with the sound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The way I speak to the lady at the checkers counter, everyone for me is equal.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a lot when I'm at concerts or events, people or fans, the artists are like, they put them up there because you've just helped me realize it's because you're helping them create a world in their mind that's away from their normal reality.
Exactly.
And their perceived normal, in inverted commas, life.
Yeah, and I think that exists in all sorts of walks of life. You know, that people who, in a company, when that director comes, they're deferential. But when they see the cleaning lady, then they don't, you know, they don't regard how they feel. And for me, I feel we are all the same.
Yes.
If I'm on stage and someone is, you know, the usher or someone is selling drinks outside, we are all doing the same thing. And I obviously they're not on stage in lights, but we're all working. We are all doing what we can to support ourselves, to support our families, and we are all the same. And I really do believe in treating everybody the same.
Equal, yeah.
Because just because someone is not in a position that you think, oh, they're not a director, you just don't know how influential they might be. Because life is a spider's web.
Yes.
And you don't know how people are connected. And so the good thing to do is just to respect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that what goes around comes around. You know, when you give that respect, you will get that respect and love from everybody else.
And gratitude, et cetera.
Gratitude and being grateful for everything and not taking anything for granted.
Hashtag drop the mics, but we're not going to do that because we're busy.
We don't
want to
break the expensive mic.
Timothy, what do you enjoy about performing live?
That's a big question. What I love about performing live is when you're on stage live, there is no other feeling in the world. You know, you could be doing the same concert, the same show, but each show, each performance is unique. It's different. Nothing is ever the same. And I love that there's that sense of danger, that sense of excitement, that anything can happen. And for me, that adrenaline that pumps when you hear the audience applaud and when you hear the band start a piece of music, there is nothing that beats it, because it's a moment that you share with the audience, is a moment of truth, and it's a moment of self-discovery as well, because many times we grow as artists from what we give to people and the feedback they give us. As someone will say, I got this from that song. Sometimes you'll sing maybe an up-tempo song and someone will come to you and say, ah, I heard a different meaning of that song.
Yeah.
It moved me in a different way, or it reminds me of my mom or my grandfather. And it's so special. The concept of being on stage is something I treasure and I appreciate. As much as you are fulfilling yourself, you are helping and fulfilling other people, and you are spreading light, you're spreading joy. And in this world that we're living in, you know, that little moment of joy is very precious.
You performing on stage, obviously the audience is that there for that, but maybe something goes wrong that the audience doesn't know.
Yeah.
There may be a technical something or whatever, but the audience doesn't know any of this. How do you take, you personally from your experience, take, and I'm going to say ego, because it is ego. How does Timothy Ego step out of the way and know that, okay, all this nonsense is going in the background, I need to just step up, because the audience don't know.
They do. Because a light falls or something happens.
Okay, that's obvious. That's very obvious.
We hope that never happens. Yes. But anything can happen on stage. As I say, if you're on stage, like with a band, like I'm going to be, you know, next week, you realize that we are all having the same feeling, the same anxieties, excitement. Being on stage, you could say it's dangerous, but we enjoy and we embrace that danger because it fulfills us. It gives us that adrenaline. It's interesting to see how we, you know, how one deals with all those things that happen on stage. They say it's not how you mess up, they say it's how you recover. With experience, I find that you're able to find ways to just pick up from where you left off and continue with your performance. And sometimes, like when you fall or when something happens, sometimes it's those experiences that people remember, that remember when this happened in the show. You know, it makes that experience very thrilling and very electrifying. And, you know, it's there's no better feeling in the world.
When those situations happen, and obviously the more the audience is aware, does it ever, that voice of little doubt that you mentioned earlier coming through and start criticizing and judging, or have you learned to shut that voice out in these situations?
I have unfortunately learned to shut that out.
Okay,
and good. the one for me, the trick is one thing: preparation, preparation, preparation. If you are prepared, you are ready for anything. And for me, when I go on stage, I want to know that I know the music, I know the arrangements, I know what it means to me. And this way, when you're on stage, you are conveying a message and you are sort of a conduit for something higher than you. You know, I don't believe in any hoo-ha things, but I do believe that, you can be a conduit for, for light, for positivity, for joy. I love that thrill of the unknown. But if you're prepared, literally anything can happen and you're able to deal with it quickly and in the best way possible. And sometimes it can actually even, you know, increase your adrenaline or the adrenaline of the people watching. And it's there's nothing that can beat life.
I think it's also about acknowledging that situation.
Yeah.
Instead of like trying to show or ignore that it happened and carrying on, because the audience are like, you know, they'll pick it up as they saw it. Oh, this happened. Ha ha. Like, you get what I'm trying to say.
And audiences are clever than many times we give them credit. Sometimes they may not even be able to put a word to something that they saw or heard
or felt,
but they know that it made them feel a certain way.
Yeah.
And so they are clever and they know what's going on and you can't fool them. Many times I get feedback from audiences that say, you know, tonight you sang that note like that and it just made my day. And, you know, it's that feedback is what keeps us going. We get the thrill from it, and it keeps each show fresh. As I say, that danger, that thrill, that electricity is beautiful. And that's why audiences come to a show and support, because they're excited to see what's going to happen. Mm. How's everything going to go? Yep. And they're part of that process as well, because they go on that journey with you as well on stage.
We'll get to Swinging Las Vegas shortly, which is a show of renditions of different types of songs. And I've seen you in those type of shows previously. Do you ever record your own original music?
I have recorded my own original music. I have been nominated for some awards. Oh. I've released some music. I had a song that I released about a year and a half ago called
okay.
Love Is Never Blind. People have been responding positively to that. And yeah, so I do release new music. I write new music. And my fans have been pushing me, saying we need new music soon. So I will definitely pull my socks and get something prepared for that.
Because you're busy a lot with these other types of shows with Swinging Las Vegas, does that sometimes bring in a little bit of procrastination or laziness around releasing original stuff because you're busy with all this other stuff? Not laziness, let's take that word out. Maybe procrastination or distraction. Because you've got all these other types of shows that you are working on, and it takes you away from that tunnel vision of creativity for original, or not necessarily.
There's a touch of truth in that. In that, when many times when we have to do our own projects, many times sort of those take a little backseat to the opportunities that we get. And so you've hit something there. It's a challenge every day to make sure that you live a fulfilling life. You are fulfilled. You're fulfilling your purpose. And I have been extremely, extremely fortunate with the opportunities I've gotten. But I do feel like everything happens in its own time.
Okay.
And I do believe everything sort of has a time and place.
What's the difference for you performing your original music compared to when you performing other artists' music?
That's a very good question. I think with other artists' music, you feel, I think sometimes it's easier to interpret because you're finding your own interpretation. You're finding your own way of doing it. When it's your own song, sometimes you can feel exposed, almost naked.
That's so interesting.
But it's part of the whole process.
Yes.
Because then some other people maybe perform your songs, and then you see their take on your music. So I guess that would be the main difference, is that with other music, I'm not as self-conscious about the lyrics or the lyric content or the arrangement. But when it's your music, you know, because we as artists, we can never stop criticizing. I should have sung this line like that. I should have written that line like that.
A little voice.
Yeah. But I love that feeling of sharing something you've written, something that you were inspired to write. And when you see it move other people as well, that's another special feeling that nothing can really compare to, because then something that came from the depths of your soul or from your suffering or from something you've experienced is then helping somebody deal with whatever they're dealing with. So that can be quite powerful, and I really enjoy that.
But I find a lot of people these days, they have, because of the speed of everything,
yeah,
and their attention spans getting shorter and smaller, that music is sort of in the background, in the periphery.
Yeah.
They don't even have the words. I speak to so many people and I say to them, do you actually know what that song's about?
I'm like,
no idea. I just enjoy it. And I tell them, and they're shocked. I'm like, oh, I didn't think it would be about that. The point I'm trying to make is that the people who need to be moved and hear what needs to be heard will be open to it. But I think these days it may be a little bit more challenging to reach them because of all the filters that are there with phones, with digital, with distractions. It's a little bit more to get that to move them. But then again, that's the receiver's choice.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And I find people with all this noise and everything happening, it's amazing. What ends up happening is that people seek us or seek the music that they like. What happens is that people will say, you know, on Spotify, I said, I heard this song that you released 10 years ago and I only heard it today. Oh my goodness, it's amazing. And the emotion sometimes behind music. That's why, you know, we say music is an international language. Mm. Sometimes you don't even have to understand the words of the song for it to move you in a certain way.
Yeah.
Music is very, very, very powerful. People are able to seek what they need and seek the music that they want. As I say, music is so powerful that you may not understand what the words are. You may not even know what the song means, but you can connect to the essence of music. You know, you can get, if you need a song to be soothing, to be calming, you can find that music. And so sometimes what the song actually means lyrically or in terms of the content of it, sometimes is not so important all the time. As long as you can connect to the essence of it, mm-hmm. and you can be moved, you know, some way or form.
Swing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, Swing in Las Vegas. Last year we did a show called Swing in Las Vegas and it blew us away. I shared the stage with Craig Abani, Harris Theodoropoulos, and we had Gorlia, who was a featured female singer, and the Johannesburg Big Band.
Mm-hmm. So last year was the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought there had been previous
years. No. That was the first iteration of the show.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
It blew our minds. It sold so well. It's actually a few performances were sold out. People loved it. I met a lot of people who sort of woke up too late and they couldn't find tickets and they were so upset. And since the show happened and the response we got was so amazing, I've been going to so many performances, shows. Wherever I go, people have been saying, are you going to bring that show back? And so I am thrilled that we are back this year with Nadine, the fantastic, wonderful Nadine. Harris Theodoropoulos is back. Craig Abani, mm-hmm. the amazing entertainer. And the 18-piece strong Johannesburg Big Band. And I am so excited to take people on the journey of all the artists who made Las Vegas, You know, the Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole. I mean, many people, when they think Las Vegas, they think Elvis. But they don't realize maybe sometimes that Las Vegas is such an iconic space that people that we're going to pay tribute to in the show are people who've been to Las Vegas. Celine Dion, Lady Gaga,
yeah.
Robbie Williams, Lionel Richie. And so it's a journey through time. It's a journey of music that we know, you know, music is sort of is a fabric of our lives and we know where we were when we heard certain songs. Mm-hmm. So in this show, we go all the way back to the Red Peg days to Lionel Richie, who was there a few years ago, and people can just enjoy this amazing music, these standards sung by the likes of Ella Fitzgerald, Bobby Darin, mm-hmm. you name it, we're doing it. And people love these songs because they are sort of evergreen songs, songs like Unforgettable, songs like Something Stupid, songs like Lionel Richie All Night Long. Mm-hmm. Imagine hearing that song given the big band treatment. So I'm loving the whole idea of taking this music and we're on stage with, as I say, 18-piece strong Joburg Big Band. Every musician on that stage is a soloist in their own right. They've won awards. They've been nominated for awards. And to be on that stage is such an honor. And that feeling, that excitement, that energy that I felt last year, you know, we did 8 performances as well and they went like that. And so I'm excited to be doing the show with, it's all new music. But we're taking people on that nostalgic journey and giving them the songs that they have grown to love and, the songs that have become the fabric of our, you know, our lives. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be amazing.
It's interesting because in the 60s, I'd say 50s or 60s, 70s ish, when artists performed at Las Vegas, it was like a residency like it is now. But then, late 70s, 80s, 90s, if you're an artist performing in Las Vegas, you're a has-been, that type of label. And I think if I'm, to be corrected, audience, and listeners, I'm not sure if maybe Celine Dion was one of the ones that opened that up to become trendy. Not that, it has been, that's been in the industry now, trying to sell tickets now, go to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But now it's not Lady Gaga, Adele, all these people, Kylie, exactly. They're all doing
these residencies. Celine had a theater built just for her.
Didn't realize that. Yeah. Yes.
Like that, it was built around her show. And obviously she was at the height of her fame and success. And
so I think she changed the mindset of
she definitely did
shows in Las Vegas.
She definitely did. Vegas then became a vehicle. It's like you haven't been, you know, you're not a true artist until you've been to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those bucket list things, but Celine definitely played a big role. And, right now, I mean, it's literally, you look at, just Google anyone who's ever been on Las Vegas and you'll be surprised, because literally whatever genre you like, whatever music, jazz, pop, R&B, soul, you name it, they have been on Las Vegas. And I'm so looking forward to singing some of my favorite songs by some of my favorite artists as well.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 10 minutes, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite.
Yeah.
I'm saying top of mind, as I said. If you had to push play to 5 artists once we finish this conversation, and if you can think of specific songs from those artists, if not, who would the artists be of those 5? What artists or bands? And if you can think of songs, what would those songs be?
Michael Bublé.
Hmm.
Sway. Which we're doing in the show, by the way.
Okay. Don't give too many.
yes. I don't want to give anything away.
Yes.
And, but some of the artists that have just been very influential in my life, Whitney Houston, The Greatest Love of All.
Okay.
That song, the first time I heard that song, I think I was a teenager, and it spoke to me because it literally was about that self-belief.
Yeah.
That quietening of that little voice of doubt. And, Luther Vandross is another one of my big, icons. Nat King Cole was how I actually sort of discovered the world of jazz and big band. Nat King Cole and his daughter, Natalie Cole.
Oh, yes.
They are some of the biggest, you know, artists in the world. And when Natalie Cole did Unforgettable.
Yes.
With using the recordings of Nat King Cole, it was quite groundbreaking at the time, to take a recording of someone who was no longer alive.
Yeah.
And then to refreshen it. And to do a new arrangement. And I mean, that song, that album, I think it was called Unforgettable with Love.
Exactly.
That was a multi Grammy Award winning
album. Yes, one, I think, went Grammy and Album of the Year.
Yeah. And it changed the landscape. And you think of people like Robbie Williams as well, who has been very key in keeping this big band sound fresh and alive. We know when he did that show at the Royal Albert Hall, and he did that show with the big band. You know, it was a risk because many people were not doing it at the time, but we're still singing those songs because those songs never go out of style. And
that was the beginning of the 2000s somewhere. And I remember at the time it was the biggest selling album of the year in the UK.
It was.
And in some areas of Europe and so
on. And it was a risk.
Yeah.
You know, there was no guarantee that it was going to take the way it took. And it's, those are just a handful of some of my artists, the artists that I love, but I love listening to everything classical, old, rap, rock, but I love listening to so many other different genres of music. I find if you're a singer or an artist, it's an important thing to be able to listen to a whole lot of different things, because then you're enriching your own artistry, because then you're drawing from so many different places. That's definitely my process.
So Timothy, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you for supporting us, supporting Swinging Las Vegas, which is going to be on at the Teatro in Monte from the 16th to the 25th of May.
2025.
Only 8 shows.
Yes.
You can book through web tickets, and tickets are going fast. And you don't want to be one of those people. Like last year, I met a lot of people who woke up too late and they were like, there are no tickets. So make sure that you book, you come see our show. And I really want to say particularly to young people, because there is just so much negativity out there, you know, Twitter, social media, one can feel overwhelmed. The one thing that I can say is just quieten all those voices of doubt. Believe in yourself. Find a little group of people who can believe in you. You know, seize the day. Carpe diem. Make the most of everything. Don't take anything for granted. And just take time to enjoy all the things we've been given. Health, life, family. You know, many times we can just go on and on and on and complain about, you know, the things, our problems. But my challenge to everyone, because it's a challenge to myself, is to just seize the day, make the most of every opportunity, enjoy life, live fully. Yeah, that would be it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.